Hello, everyone, and welcome to Heard on the Street, Street Fights podcast, where we uncover the stories behind the companies, and more importantly, the people that constitute this sector of media and advertising that we all call local. So where are they from? What makes them tick? What business and life lessons can we draw from that? So I'm Mike Boland, lead analyst at Street Fight, and our guest today is Andrew Beckman, a veteran of the location-based media and advertising industry, a longtime industry colleague, and thought leader and chairman of Location 3. So we talked to Andrew from our studio in San Francisco about that journey, what he's learned from it, and what we can all take away from that. So here's our discussion with Andrew Beckman. So Andrew, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Yep. So we have a lot to talk about, including kind of a deeper dive on some of those things I just mentioned. But first, let's start with the present. So tell us a little bit about yourself and Location 3 for those unfamiliar.
Sure. We are a digital marketing agency that delivers enterprise-level strategies with local market activation. Over the past few years, we've decided to really focus on the franchise space. We've always been involved with working with multi-location brands, but we've done a lot of work with the franchise industry because it's probably the hardest area for marketers to kind of help support, because you're working with the franchisor on a national and kind of an enterprise level, and then you're supporting hundreds of thousands of small business owners that are franchisees, and you're helping them with driving business within very small pockets of local areas where we deliver ads across Google, Facebook, and all the other channels that would drive business to those franchise systems.
Yeah, interesting. And a lot there to unpack. I want to go into kind of where your product set begins and ends. And a quick note before we go on too. The challenge of selling into franchises resonates with me in some of my analyst coverage. In addition to the challenges you mentioned, one thing that is fairly inconsistent is the degree to which the budgeting, the control, the execution happens at the organizational level with different franchises. Sometimes it's very centralized at the corporate level. Sometimes it's decentralized at the franchisee level. And there's no common playbook to kind of tackle that because they're all different. So what we're going to do is, like we do on this show, we're going to kind of hit the rewind button and go back in time and then kind of walk back to the present in terms of some of the kind of career paths and milestones and things like that that you've experienced and what we can all learn from that. So tell us first about like the path that brought you into this world of location-based media and advertising. You mentioned, you know, the founding and how long ago that happened. That's a lot in internet years, as we say.
Right.
So kind of start at the beginning and tell us how you got into all this.
Sure. So the first time I used to, believe this or not, this is a really interesting story, but 1997, after college, I went to live in Cape Town, South Africa, and I was bartending, and I found this company that I was using their internet cafe, and they said, and they were owned by a web development firm, and they're like, hey, would you like to sell websites for us? So that's how I got into digital marketing, is I was selling websites in Cape Town in 1997.
Wow.
And a couple things happened. One is I wasn't able to stay there that long because my visa was running out. And I realized there's a lot of stuff going on back in the States. So I came back to New York, where I'm originally from, and I joined DoubleClick in June of 1997, which was the pioneer of digital advertising. And
absolutely.
So I luckily was able to not only be part of selling ads on the Alta Vista search engine, which was the first major, well, the most popular crawler-based engine back in the day, but I was exposed to the Dart, DoubleClick Dart advertising platform.
Yep.
Which was, you know, serve the ads, track and measure the ROI. And so that kind of got me into the space. But I always realized that every brand I felt like should have a presence online, their digital footprint, their real estate. So that's kind of got me into thinking of location, location, location. That's how I came up with Location 3.
Mm-hmm.
And always did local advertising for brands, but we didn't get as hyper local back in the early 2000s as it was. It was basically like I would target a certain state or, you know, an area on the 468x60 banner ad.
Yeah.
There was no local search SEO at the time. There was no map listings because that's when Universal Search came into play in 2006. We started when Universal Search came out in 2006. That's when we really started focusing on local in a greater way, and we started optimizing clients for their local listing, local listings on like what was called, you know, Google Local, Google Yep. My Business, which is now Google My Business. That is obviously in an industry of itself. There's thousands of, you know, players. But what really catapulted us was our relationship with just running localized paid media campaigns and tying that into the local listings we were doing. And we started seeing, you know, benefits of having both those running at the same time. So that was kind of I would say 2006 when Google started showing the maps is when we really started getting really more serious into local and seeing it as a big play for all brands.
Yeah, that was a key milestone for local. You mentioned Universal Search, which was the forebearer to the 10-pack, which then got turned into, I think, the 7-pack and other several iterations till we got to today. But absolutely, you know, it lived beyond the kind of local the local silo of Google Maps or Google Local into the actual main search results. I remember that as being a key milestone. So interesting. So at that point of the story, you know, around 99, you found location 3. So tell us about those early days. We'd love talking to founders about that kind of early day challenges. And especially, like, I think in your case, it brings an even additional layer of information or relevance in that, you know, this was in the late 90s. I'm wondering, like, what are some of the kind of universal lessons in terms of some of those early day challenges? And what's different in terms of then versus kind of startup challenges now today? And then the underlying question is, what are some of your advice for the would-be entrepreneurs and founders out there in terms of some of your success factors in those early days?
Sure. You know, the early days, you know, luckily I was able to have that experience at DoubleClick. And so when I left, I was able to work with brands all over the world, and there was a number of channels at the time I was able to buy advertising.
Yep.
Back then there was Excite, WebCrawler, InfoSeek. It wasn't just Google and Bing nowadays. It was a lot more, and there was all these different advertising networks. I would say one of the pieces of advice that I give startups is doing consulting work. While you're building a platform, while you're building some type of business revenue stream, because, you know, at least get some type of capital and revenue under your belt. I think a lot of companies go right to looking for funding some type of capital to help them accelerate their business. And I think for the majority, that's not the way to go. Bootstrapping a business, there's a lot to be said, and not just, I think, financial reward long term. I think you feel like you've, you know, started from the bottom and then you take it to, you know, to the new heights. So, and then you're not owned by somebody.
Yeah.
But what I had the luxury of is I was able to buy media. I would say to a company, hey, here's $10,000, and I'd buy the media at $8,000 and I'd make a spread. With all the programmatic buying nowadays, it's really just very difficult to
Sure.
be an ad broker and try to jump up business. I mean, you really have to have a speciality and a focus. I would say that is one of the things I struggled with for a number of years, is I allowed us to get into areas to make money that I think kind of it brought us into too many directions. I felt like we're very focused now, but that wasn't always our story. We worked in the EDU space for a number of years. Hmm. We were doing lead gen for various verticals. We had a design business for a few years that wasn't the best idea for us, and building websites. But you know, so I would recommend trying to build a business that you can bootstrap, finding revenue in a consulting while you're building your core business, you know, and be focused overall on what you're doing, have a mission and knowing where, set your sights on, setting goals to hit that mission.
Yeah. Well, the company's longevity, I think, supports what you're saying in terms of a bootstrapped approach and a kind of slower growth approach. And I don't mean to say slow growth as a bad, in a bad way. I think that it's very prudent advice. You know, me in being in Silicon Valley, funding, outside funding, venture funding, seems to have kind of gotten this prominence where it's almost a vanity factor. And few people talk about some of the downsides. And there are some of the clear downsides like liquidity, giving up equity, things like that. But also, I think you bring up a good point in terms of if someone owns you, it sort of takes some optionality off the table in terms of the size of the exit that's possible once you are expected to kind of produce venture-sized returns or a venture-sized exit. So I think the optionality and all that is very interesting. So I think that's great advice for our listeners. So we are going to pause there for a commercial break. When we come back, more from Andrew Beckman. Hi everyone, this is Mike Bolin, lead analyst with Street Fight, and I'd like to talk to you today about Street Fight in 2019. So we've got lots of good things cooking and lots of opportunities for you to get involved. So we're looking for guests on this podcast. We're looking for editorial contributions from thought leaders. We're looking for inspiring speakers at our events. And all of that really comes together in the rich mosaic that you've come to know as Street Fight's thought leadership in location-based media and advertising and commerce and innovation. And part of that formula are lots of opportunities to sponsor content and have your brand associated with that thought leadership. So stay tuned for lots more information and announcements for those rollouts, and reach out to us if you have any questions or want your voice heard in that chorus of narratives, including this podcast and messages like this one. So you can email me at michael@streetfightmag.com for more, and we're looking forward to working with you in 2019. So we're back. My guest is Andrew Beckman. So Andrew, before the break, we were going over a lot of the aspects of your background, a lot of the kind of career lessons that I think were very valuable and concrete. So that brings us to the present. So let's talk about kind of what you're up to today. So location three, one of the things you mentioned it, and I've seen this before, I really like it in terms of a concept, and it's kind of your tagline, and you can probably repeat it, but paraphrasing it, something like enterprise level marketing, but at a local activation level, given that we are increasingly influenced by online and digital media, but there's still such a large percentage of consumer buying and spending and all that happens at a local level offline. So I think that your tagline kind of nicely encapsulates that. So that as a lead-in to, you know, tell us more about that tagline, conceptually what you're going for, and then also we can go into kind of what you're working on now that you think is most notable.
Sure. You know, I think the statistic is like 90% of commerce is still happening in retail stores.
Yep.
So, you know, you're still dealing with, and people, you know, want to get out, they want to, you know, purchase something. From a national brand, I think what you're seeing is that the mobile device has really changed everything, right? So I'm on the move and, you know, I can show people ads and everybody's, but at the end of the day, if I'm a national advertiser, whether I'm even Coca-Cola or if I'm, you know, Best Buy, if I'm Coca-Cola, I'm a consumer packaged goods, I'm still selling. They have data on, okay, we know that these specific markets drive more consumers to buy our products, right? And then Best Buy is trying to get people into their stores in addition to, I know they're doing online commerce, but come into a store and buy products. So these are national brands, right? They're enterprise strategic brands that spend tens of millions of dollars on broadcast and billboards and TV. But the reality is the digital with the mobile device allows them to get very specific on targeting their ads, messaging their ads, and delivering the sales that they're looking for in specific local markets. So most advertisers say, hey, I want to be, I'm everywhere. I sell my products and services all over the nation, and I can just broadcast my ads. But the real smart, sophisticated advertisers are bringing it down to local market activation campaigns. Yeah. And to do that, it's a very sophisticated process. You have to have specific tools and expertise in place. And I would say the vast majority of large enterprise brands still don't get that right.
Yeah, the localization strategies and a lot of brands kind of being behind on that, as you characterized, I think is interesting. And I think it's encouraging for, I guess it's a double-edged sword, but on the positive side, for a lot of folks that are helping them get there, like Location 3, there's a lot of headroom for growth because I think that there's still so much evolution to be done, which I think is interesting. And you mentioned that 90% figure. It's funny, whenever I cite that figure kind of as an industry analyst, I'm always citing figures. It always surprises people because there's so much attention paid to things like e-commerce as opposed to that like offline spend where just the vast majority of activity and consumer spend is happening. But you also mentioned the fragmentation, which is interesting. So the question really is, how do you see that evolving in terms of the consumer behavior? Because obviously the way that the industry is led and the tactics and the product sets to be calibrated is directly a function of how the consumer behavior is itself evolving. You mentioned mobile, there's social. Where are you seeing kind of trending in terms of, you know, influence, places where consumers are being influenced? I think mobile is clear. Social continues to be a large influence, things like reviews. What other kind of, I guess, formats or channels are you seeing that are one, influential, and two, that's kind of guiding the calibration of your own strategies and product sets for brands?
Well, you know, all these channels that you just mentioned, whether it's Instagram or Twitter or Google on the search side, I mean, at the end of the day, the foundation, I believe, is the content that's being created and being shared. So you can actually influence, I believe, that customer journey. You know, you can, that's what I think the brands have to realize is that not only can we track and measure it, the Holy Grail is influencing them by, content, right? What are they interested in? For me, it's, we tell our clients, hey, look, you know, we can see what's going, we know the conversion data on the paid side, we know what works. If you're not ranking organically on those terms that we know work, that's what we call a keyword gap. Huh. And so we then fill that gap with the content. We rank that content organically. So look, Google is Google, right? So it's still a major, major influencer on the customer journey, probably the number one. So we take care of that first. Then we take that same content and we amplify it across the social channels, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, on paid and organic efforts. Mm-hmm. So now we're using that channel to help amplify the content. So, and then again, we're getting in front of that customer journey, influencing them to purchase something. And then when we bring them to the site to make a purchase or drive them into a store, we have using conversion rate optimization tactics. You know, how are we influencing that consumer so I can't say there's going to be, I can't say to you, hey, there's this XYZ app that's the greatest of end all be all. There's nothing new that I can say right now other than that the fundamentals of, you know, Google has the most traffic. Facebook and YouTube, and then you got Facebook is right there. And so for me, I want to tell most of these brands, like, let's monetize what you're – let's optimize and monetize what you're currently doing. And don't chase after that shiny object right away.
So they kind of cross-channel blitz and having, you know, occupying the greatest portion of the funnel as possible by being present across all those channels. And you know – for every advertiser, that mix of channels is going to be slightly different. But what are the challenges? You mentioned content, and I think that's a great point. Do you see challenges in having content that is consistent in a holistic strategy across a lot of those channels, but yet is kind of natively optimized for each one in order to kind of, you know, comply with the unique dynamics of each of those channels and how consumers approach search and what are best practices in search versus Instagram versus Facebook, and have like cohesion across the whole campaign, but yet native optimization per channel. What are kind of some of the things you're doing there?
I mean, I think the first thing that brand should think about doing and is video consumption is such a big growth area. And you can really kill two birds with one stone with video. It's because you can transcribe the video and use that text as well. As so when the crawler comes to the pages, they're not only seeing the video, the crawler is seeing the video and indexing it, they're also seeing the text, and you can use internal linking strategies as there. But if I want to explain a service or product that I want to sell as a brand, I see using video is the better way than just writing text, or obviously you can do video and text. Yep. It's just because of the way consumers are ingesting media nowadays. I mean, it's just people are not looking to read. They're just like getting these quick, you know, videos or images like Instagram. That's why Instagram is so popular, is you could just look at the image and you put some basic text on it. So yep. I think with the content, if we can make it, you know, and it gets more expensive this way and it takes more time to do, is really getting more, you know, animated and video production in place. I think that will make a big difference for brands with their content development strategy.
Yeah, and it complies with kind of millennial sensibilities in terms of affinity for video, things that are more visual. They love the camera in terms of other kind of evolving ad formats. So we're going to pause for another commercial break. When we come back, more from Andrew Beckman. Hi everyone, this is Mike Bolin, lead analyst with Street Fight, and I'd like to talk to you today about Street Fight in 2019. So we've got lots of good things cooking and lots of opportunities for you to get involved. So we're looking for guests on this podcast. We're looking for editorial contributions from thought leaders. We're looking for inspiring speakers at our events. And all of that really comes together in the rich mosaic that you've come to know as Street Fight's thought leadership in location-based media and advertising and commerce and innovation. And part of that formula are lots of opportunities to sponsor content and have your brand associated with that thought leadership. So stay tuned for lots more information and announcements for those rollouts, and reach out to us if you have any questions or want your voice heard in that chorus of narratives, including this podcast and messages like this one. So you can email me at michael@streetfightmag.com for more, and we're looking forward to working with you in 2019. So we're back. My guest is Andrew Beckman. So Andrew, before the break, we were talking about a lot of kind of tactical stuff around multi-location brand advertising, optimizing things for the local level, optimizing things for varying consumer behavior, the fragmentation of media, all that good stuff. We're going to switch gears now and go into kind of more stuff about you. So one thing we often like to discuss on this show are kind of some of the geographical factors of the kind of executives that we talk to, and the interesting places where they've been and where they live and where they work. You mentioned earlier when you got started in this business, you were in Cape Town. You also mentioned some stuff about traveling in the Benelux region. But right now, I think you have an interesting setup. You're based in Denver. I know that you also spend a lot of time in New York. What are kind of some of the things that you highlight about your setup in terms of like quality of life and working and living and all that good stuff?
So, I moved out to Denver for a quality life. It was 2002 dot-com bubble burst, and things weren't going so well for our industry. And I thought, you know, I'd want to kind of get in the outdoors. So I moved to Denver, Colorado, and I've been here for now, it'll be 17 years in February. It's been a long time. I do go back to New York quite often. I had a place for about 7 years there. But I gave that up because it was just going back and forth was a lot. But it's, you know, it's two different worlds. Obviously, you know, New York's very fast paced. The heart of the advertising industry is a lot going on there. It's just a hard life to live when you're there 12 months out of the year, and it kind of gets gray at times. Like, I'm sure you're in New York right now. It's probably not the sunniest. The Denver was interesting because I was like, I'm moving here, and I knew it was a big tech scene, even in 2002. And what I loved about it was it's sunny here all the time. And I would say it's probably over 300 days of sunshine. It really helps your psyche. Yeah. But what has happened, made Denver such a great place, is like there's just so many young people moving here that we're able to bring them on and train them, or they bring experience from other cities, because a lot of folks are moving here from New York or California. Obviously it's slower, but it's becoming a bigger city, and it's interesting to see the development that's going on. But look, it's here. I snowboard on the weekends, and in New York City, you're going out to the great restaurants and nightlife that they have there, and so it's kind of like I get the best of both worlds when I go back or when I'm here.
Yeah, no, that's great. So let's go right into our lightning round.
Sure.
Kind of fairly quick answers about you and kind of the person that you are. So starting off, what's a profession you'd want to have if you weren't doing what you're doing now?
Ooh, I mean, who wouldn't want to be a sports player, right? I would love to be a baseball player.
Nice.
I would say that would probably be my number one. I would love to be a sports player.
Well, so that brings up another question. It maps to the Denver question. Are you a Yankees fan or a Rockies fan or either or other teams?
Well, I grew up. I'm a huge Yankees fan. I travel to see the Yankees play. But the Rockies are doing wonderfully.
Yep.
Over the past couple of years. So I do go to a lot of Rocky games.
So what is a company or startup, like either now or historically, that you think it would be just like so much fun to be part of, like the moment of inception or the founding team, like, you know, the HP Garage or like Woz and Jobs in the early days, or like where those?
I think about Google because I was used to sell ads on Alta Vista, and, you know, all of a sudden when I left, you just hear about this Google company, and we were competing against, it was Alta Vista and Yahoo at the time. And so just like right there, I remember talking to one advertiser, and he was like, well, I don't want to advertise on Alta Vista because you guys have broken links. And we used to always have problems with the crawler. I mean, they had a crawler called Scooter. That's what they called it. And it was such a problem. So here you have Google created a better product, right? They created a better search engine. And so I would have loved to have been part of that equation, back in the day.
Nice.
And not that long ago, right? It's only like 20 years ago, which is, I know, a long time ago, but it's not so long ago.
Yeah, yeah. Well, again, internet years.
Yeah, exactly.
Superhero powers. If you could have any kind of superhero power, what would you choose?
Well, but Superman, I mean, you got to go with Superman. I mean, this guy's got everything, right? Steel, he's got X-ray vision, he can, you know, I mean, there's no one stronger than that guy, I think. I would say
he can go back in time.
He can go, can he?
Well, by reversing the Earth,
like we did in the Superman 1.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. I was always interested in Green Lantern, right? He's got that ring, and he can do all these crazy things. So I would say that would probably be
An underrated superhero in my mind.
So
what are some of the kind of things you do to like mentally unplug from work, or just hobbies, like you mentioned snowboarding? What are some of your things you like to do?
I mean, snowboarding is my zen when I get away. I mean, it's, you know, it takes me a little over an hour to get to a really, you know, great mountain in Summit County here. And for me, you're in the outdoors, you got the mountains, you got the fresh air. That's where it's great to go and regroup. So that's what I would say. That's my number one that I do exercise wise. I'm a big walker. I like to do hikes.
Nice.
So that's what's great right here in Colorado, is that you're able to do these outdoor activities pretty easily, and it's so, the access is just so quick.
Yep.
You're right here. So that's what I would say. I mean, nothing better than doing physical activities and thinking about, you know, how do you improve personal or business life?
Yeah, no, that's awesome. And that leads right into the last question, which is, you know, we're at the cusp of 2019. What are some of your personal goals for the coming year?
My personal goals are I'm always striving to get into better physical shape, and I'm seeing that in the way how I snowboard and the amount of vertical snowboarding I can do and the challenging spots. So I think there is a I'm sure like everybody else or most people is a weight goal that we're trying to get to, or so that's I would say personally, just getting my health, you know, constantly improving that. Business goals, you know, I have a goal for myself is I like to start a relationship with 2 to 3 franchise systems a quarter, where I'm deeply engaged and educating them that Location 3 is the right place for them to move their business to.
Absolutely. That's great. That's all the time we have. So I want to thank you, Andrew, for spending time with us.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Thank you all for listening. Stay tuned for future episodes of Heard on the Street. You can find us on streetfightmag.com. You can subscribe on Apple Podcasts. Also, stay tuned for lots more writings and multimedia from Street Fight. So this has been Heard on the Street. I'm Mike Boland. Thanks for listening.